Blog Talk Radio.
Mother Satora Becky. Yes, I am your host, Mother Satora Becky. So tonight's show is actually about a combat veteran who is also turned a filmmaker now. And he spent some time with his special operations, which I thought was pretty cool because my dad is ex-Army Ranger. My ex is an ex-Army Ranger. And so I know it's very rare to get that insight that he was lucky to get. So I would love for everyone to welcome my guest to the show, Mitch Mackwood. Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is crazy.
No problem. Well, tell me a little bit more about you, starting from, you know, what made you join the service to how did you pick your occupation and kind of go from there.
All right. So going back to pre my birth, I come from a Navy family. My dad, all my uncles, my grandfather, they were all Navy. So growing up, I never really wanted to join the military because that's like all I heard about. So, I got into filmmaking when I was really young. Just loved the idea of like how they made these fantasy worlds real. So I decided I wanted to pursue that in college. And let's just say in high school, I wasn't the greatest student, so I didn't get into the colleges I wanted. But I had a plan to go to a 2-year community college and then transfer to a 4-year. And, I mean, full disclosure, I hated it. I hated going to that community college. So a buddy of mine got a boot camp at the time. My phone was just vibrating like crazy. So my buddy got out of boot camp. I just started looking at jobs in the military. Every branch except for the Navy. Sorry, Dad. And I found combat camera, and, I mean, it was right up my alley, and I figured, I mean, that's some training you're never going to get anywhere else, so that's how I ended up in it.
Wow, okay. So it sounds like you kind of started back when you were young, you know, just kind of messing around with the camera, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's hobby turned into a passion.
Oh, yeah, so. Absolutely, yeah.
That is so cool. Well, tell me about basically life after the military. What is, I heard you started a production company?
Yeah. So getting out of the military, I was looking at all these film schools and, you know, my heroes in the industry, they all have their own companies. So I decided, you know, I'm still going to go to film school because there's great connections there. But, I decided I know a group of people that are just as or close to as passionate as I am about it. So I talked to everybody, kind of told them my idea, and I think there's one, two, including myself, five, maybe six of us that are the company right now. And yeah, we have a couple shorts that we're going to produce hopefully in a couple months. And then you spoke to Tyler York. His documentary is the first thing that we're doing.
Yeah, that's great about how you guys are starting, you know, with parental alienation and father's rights. I think it's a topic that, unfortunately, not many people have tackled. So it's great that you guys are trying to get that out there.
Yeah, and that's kind of like the whole company, the Reluctant Productions name of it, is the shorts that we have in the works. They tackle issues that are either stigmatized, like post-traumatic stress disorder, or, you know, society just doesn't look at them in the right light. So all the stories that we have coming out within the next, I'd say, 2-3 years, we've, like, somebody on the crew has lived it. We've been through the experience, so we're not just writing up fake stories looking for the views, you know.
Now, and everybody in the production team, are they all veterans?
Yes, right now they are. We haven't brought any outsiders in yet.
Okay, very cool. No, I definitely thank you guys for your service, and you know that I definitely support, you know, veteran-owned companies. So that's great that you guys are finally getting out there. And besides the PTSD, what other short topics are you guys tackling?
So one of them is about infertility. And basically how, you know, when you hear that word infertility, you think the man or they can't have a child, that it's impossible. And that's not true. Some very good friends of mine, they went through it, they struggled with it. And, you know, my wife and I, we were with them throughout the whole journey. And I don't know if they're listening in right now, but hi Declan, my godson, he was just born a couple months ago. So, and they had, they had like a less than 10% chance of conceiving. And yeah, he's like one of the most adorable little babies I've ever seen. So we just wanted to, if we can't like fix the world or change the world, we just want to change one person's mind about a topic that may be looked at in the wrong light.
Definitely. Well, I know you sent me a YouTube clip about kind of how you started in film and, you know, just kind of how everything kind of grew. What would you say, you know, for your inspiration, where does that come from?
Ooh, no one's ever asked me that before. That's a good one. where does my inspiration come from? I mean, I know this sounds cliche, but I have to say it comes from within myself, at least at the start. You know, I didn't have any siblings that were close to my age. There's my cousin James. He's like a brother to me still. But me and him, we just started watching movies. And that, like you said, it was a hobby that turned into a passion. So I guess it was just my choice to decide to follow that. And now it's the people surrounding me. They inspire me. And they motivate me to keep going, especially my wife. I know she's not listening right now, but I'll play this for her later. She's a nurse, and, you know, she stuck with me through thick and thin, so she's definitely my biggest inspiration. Well, she won't let me quit.
Aww.
So. Yeah.
That is so cool. I love that. So what do you think is harder? Was it harder getting started or just to keep this going for filmmaking?
Keeping it going. You know, when I was a kid, I think when everyone's a kid, they aspire to be this, the greatness they see in the world, like, you know, astronaut, fireman. They want to be that symbol of heroism in the world. And for me, that was always, I wanted to be an actor. I don't want to act anymore. And so it was easy to start with that. But you know, like the experiences as combat camera, working overseas with special forces and everything, it changed my outlook on the world and the impact that film has. And the reason I say it's hard to keep it going is because I know there's stuff I could do that I'm not saying I'm smart enough to be like a surgeon or a doctor, but there's stuff I could do that could help people now. But I know that film is ultimately going to have the biggest impact, I think, personally. You may disagree with me. That's fine. I'll just make a movie to change your minds. No, I'm kidding. yeah, it's definitely hard to keep it going, especially like, well, I banned the news in my house because I don't, you know, it's all just bad stuff. But I know there's some other, like maybe even a social worker. I'm very into psychology and the human mind. I know I could help people now, but it wouldn't be as vast or as influential, I think.
Okay. Now, about the topic of PTSD, why do you think it's finally taken all this time for the military to, I guess, accept that diagnosis and help our veterans?
I mean, if you look back at the history of it, General Patton was quoted as calling soldiers on the front lines who would come back, calling them sissies and, you know, wusses, and send them back to the front with shell shock. So, yeah, I don't know why it took them so long to understand that, you know, war changes people, seeing horrible things, no matter what it is, not just war, just any traumatic experience. But I was actually involved in it was a somewhat new program when I was in it called TRP, and oh God, I forgot what that stands for now. I think it's like trauma recovery program. It was all veterans, or not veterans. We were all active duty, and it was just a daily like group session and then individual therapies. Excuse me. And we would just talk about how, like a lot, we would talk about how it's just so misunderstood, and you know, there's still people out there who deny that it's even real. And I think it might be, you know, they've actually showed brain scans of people with PTSD, and I think it's their right hemisphere of the brain has actually shrunk. So it's actually a physical thing. It's not just, quote unquote, in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe with the new technologies and medicine, maybe that's why the military is, like, starting to accept it now. But, yeah, even when I was diagnosed, was that like 4 years ago now? It was still a fight to get the help and treatment I needed.
Now, can I ask what happened that caused the PTSD for you?
Yeah, I'll tell you the main one. It's kind of complex. So as combat camera, when we deploy, we don't deploy as like a traditional unit would, where the whole unit goes overseas and they come back together. We go in small teams. My team was a 12-person team. And then when we get to the country, we split up. So we're by ourselves. And as I just turned 21, I just got promoted to E4. I was afraid to talk, basically. Like, that's a harder position to be put in when you're so young, by yourself, working with these guys. You know, they got they're manly men. Like, the beards and everything. So I just kind of kept to myself, and, you know, they joked on me and made fun of me, and because I take pictures. So, but the one that happened that I think affected me the most would be we did a mission, and it was a couple days after the mission. We found out that on top of this hill, it looked like they cut like a moat around the top of the hill, and all the dirt was piled on top of it. And in that mound was a bunch of IEDs, and I had stood on top of those to, you know, take photos of the surrounding area. And I just remember when the team told me, like, yeah, they found a bunch of IEDs under there, it felt like my soul was ripped out of my body. And that one really, I mean, it still kind of sticks with me, because it's like, I wouldn't have known if the IED went off. I wouldn't have known what had happened. It would have just been.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, yeah, that one, it's weird. That's why I said it's like complex. And like, I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. I just kind of like shrugged it off. And then you know, that ultimately turns into the turning off of the emotions so that, you know, when that stuff does happen, you don't react emotionally, you react logically. And then you can't flip the switch, unfortunately, and just turn all your emotions back on, except for, you know, the anger and the depression and stuff. But I'm doing a lot better now.
Good. I was just going to ask, how is everything? Good.
Oh, yeah,
no, I totally understand, because, good. I mean, I understand because I come from a military life. My dad was an ex-Army Ranger, Vietnam. And so, obviously, during that time, they don't talk about anything, you know, that, you know, as you said, manly men. And my uncle was the same. He was a Green Beret in Vietnam. So they, you know, obviously saw a lot over there. So I was kind of raised with kind of the same mentality and, you know, that, you know, the military life, as I call it. And and then I met my first son's father. He was actually a Marine when I met him. He was Marine Force Recon, and then he got out after our son. I was pretty much, as the old saying, you know, you marry your dad. That's pretty much what happened. And so he was Marine Force Recon when I met him, and then he got out. And unfortunately, he was one of those guys that just could not acclimate after military life. So he went back in, and he decided, he was probably about 26 at the time, you know, let's go to Ranger School. So he actually went to Ranger School around the same time with Chris Kyle and went through training and all that with them. Yeah. So, right. So it's definitely, I understand the whole PTSD, military life. It's just a different way of life. And, oh my goodness. So what is one mistake that you think most filmmakers make, regardless of any of experience?
One mistake that most, are you talking about like newly, like independent, or just any filmmaker?
Any filmmaker out there. It could be an independent, it could be or somebody big.
Okay. I think one thing that I've noticed, one mistake that people make, is having or going into any project with an ego and thinking that, you know, your poop doesn't stink. Like, for me, I always tell people, like, I can always be better at no matter what I'm doing, because the second you're okay with where you're at is the second you stop learning. So I think the biggest mistake that filmmakers can make, whether you're J.J. Abrams directing Star Wars or me directing my cats running around the house, like, don't ever think that you're better than someone, because no one's better than anybody.
Yeah, very true. I mean, you have to stay humble, especially in this industry. I'm actually not behind the cameras. I'm in front of the cameras. I actually do extra acting. So.
Oh, there you go.
So, you know, I just appreciate, you know, being on set and, you know, doing what I do.
That's awesome.
It doesn't pay the bills.
Where have I seen you?
But, you know, there's two that's coming out. There's one called Diverted Eden, and there's another one called Heavenly Deposit, and they're coming out this year. So,
I'll
definitely
keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. And it's something actually that I kind of just fell into. I made a bucket list after I almost died in 2013. And part of my bucket list was to get over my fear of public speaking and being in front of a camera and just kind of put myself out there.
You're doing a great job with that.
Thank you. You know, military, we just jump right in 2 feet. So that's what I ended up doing. Exactly. Goodness. So what advice would you give to somebody who wanted to have a life-creating film?
Oh, What advice would I give somebody? I would just say don't give up, no matter how hard it gets. Because, I mean, over the past year, I've hit some pretty new lows that I didn't know I could hit pursuing this, getting out of the military, transitioning to civilian life, you know, all that. So don't give up. Like, the way that I put it is, you know, in 100 years, knock on wood, when I'm on my deathbed, would I rather look back and wonder what if, or no, even if I pursue it my whole life and I fail, I know that I gave it my all. So just, like, follow your dreams. Like, I feel like the American dream is dying or dead, and I'm trying to prove to myself, at least, that it's still alive. Like, you don't have to have money or come from a family with a name to make yourself something. You can just come from anywhere and do anything.
That is very true. I like that. That's a great answer. So
thank
what
you.
Makes the film great for you? Like, when you are sitting out there and watching it, somebody else's work, what makes it great for you?
I like when they try to break the rules. You know, you have to know the rules to break the rules. And what makes a film great for me is when it can affect me on a deep level, like a psychological level, not even by the actors in it, but just by the sound and the editing and the camera movement. Like, to me, that's the best kind of directing out there. David Fincher is a great example of that. Like, what makes a great film for me is when I can walk out of the theater, I
nice.
Just don't know how to
there
react to what I saw. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. So, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Good job. A for effort. I mean, that's a good question. I like that question. I mean, if I ultimately fail in this, I would want somebody to just pat me on the back and be like, you gave it your all. But if I succeed, I would want to hear, like, you stayed true to who you were.
Like,
you
like
never
that.
Sold out.
Okay.
You never, yeah. I don't ever want to sell out. I don't want to become, you know, just in it for the money. I never want that. And I don't want my crew like that either. And they're not.
Okay. What is your weirdest or biggest fear?
Driving. I'm terrified of driving.
Really?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know why. I think it was living in Maryland. I hate driving. It's one of my biggest fears. If I don't have to drive, I'm not driving.
Is it like Boston where you have like tons of one-way streets and... See, I'm a Cali girl, I've never been that way.
Oh, yeah, it's like New York City. I accidentally drove through that once, and that was a nightmare. But, I mean, it's just the back roads. Like, I get behind the wheel of a car, and I'm like, okay, I'm going the speed limit. I'm buckled up. I just want to get from point A to point B. Like, and everyone else, I hope they think the same thing that I'm thinking, and they're not trying to be reckless. That's my, like, biggest and weirdest fear is driving.
Okay. Now, is that because did you have anything traumatic happen, like a car crash?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that. My first mission outside the wire in Afghanistan, we got in a head-on collision with a bus. So.
Oh.
I was like,
wow.
Yeah. And it was like the last second the bus turned and, you know, like ripped the front left side of our car off and it was up armored. And the bus flipped over. But, yeah, it was like, I mean, it happened so fast. I just saw, like, this red blur. I was sitting in the back seat, and I just put my seatbelt on, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I haven't had, like, any huge car accidents, but I'm just terrified that I might.
Yeah. Well, especially after that, definitely.
I mean,
I totally understand.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the fear just because I actually, when I was 7 months pregnant, I was in a horrible car crash and I was T-boned.
Oh, no.
And the door went into my belly and into the baby's head. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's taken me 28 surgeries, kiddo 8 surgeries. And it, for the longest time, I did not want to drive. I was like, nope.
Oh, my God. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So I totally understand
wow.
that whole driving issue.
I mean, you understand
yeah.
it better than I do. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry that happened to you.
No, I mean, the way that I look at it is, you know, that it made me a stronger person. You know, unfortunately, I am a single mom, so I had to
mm-hmm.
deal with that on top of, I had an 11-year-old at the time, and so
oh,
I had to
man.
Figure out, like, how to survive, you know, financially and physically, because once the baby was taken out, that I was actually paralyzed from the waist down. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it took 3 back surgeries to finally be able to get up and walking. And so, I mean, It's been a journey, but I'm
oh
still
God.
Here.
I was just
so
thinking, I'm going to have to, yeah, I'm going to make a movie about you. That's insane.
Oh, that's just part of the story. Yeah, so that's the way I look at it. Like, you know, if it just makes you stronger and it makes you into that person that I am today. So, you know,
yeah,
hopefully
exactly.
it inspires one person out there that
yeah.
you know, just push through
and yeah.
you know, this is what happens.
I love that you just said inspires one person, because that's like my whole philosophy. If I can just inspire one person or change one person's outlook on life or something, I've won. I've succeeded. So I love that you just said
nice.
That.
Nice. Oh, thank you. So what cheers you up besides your lovely
what
wife?
What cheers me up? Kelly, yeah. My cats, I love my kittens, Sadie and Milo. My friends, yeah. The family, obviously. And movies, I mean, just, yeah, that cheers me up.
Okay, very nice. Now, have you met anybody famous?
No, not that I, no. I always thought
if you
it might
had
happen
the
when
chance.
I was in the military.
Yeah. If you had the chance, who would you want to meet?
Bo Burnham.
Okay, I don't
you
know
who
that
is.
Okay. No.
He's a stand-up comedian. I actually saw him live a couple years ago. We were front row. My wife surprised me with the tickets because I'm a huge fan of his. His specials
nice.
Are on Netflix. You should definitely check him out. He's amazing. And he's
okay.
really smart, and he just seems like a down-to-earth guy.
Huh. I will definitely have to yeah. check him out, because, yeah, I've unfortunately not heard of him yet.
Yeah, he's
so
amazing. I totally have a man crush on him. I'm not even ashamed to admit it.
You'll own that. Nice. So what films out there have been most inspiring or influential for you, and why?
Well, my childhood, I have to say The Lion King. How do I explain this? So I'm a child of divorce, and I went through a rough patch when I was a kid, like dealing with that and trying to understand that, because I was 2 years old when it happened. And, you know, it affected me, but like I said earlier, my cousin is like my brother. I used to spend a lot of time over there when my mom would work, because she would travel a lot for work. And every time that I would go over, we would watch The Lion King. It became a standing tradition. So, that got me through, like, you know, all that. And then as far as recently, I'm trying to think of a movie that really just – Interstellar. There's really one scene in Interstellar that just really inspired me. It's that scene – I don't know if you've seen it.
I have, yeah.
Where he – okay. where they go to that one planet and they're like, we were gone for 20 years, and he sees his kids grow up on the message service thing. And he's just like sobbing, crying. That inspired me in a weird way to not let life pass me by. Like, how did somebody put it one time? Like, if life is a road trip, you could speed to the end, or you could drive slowly and look at all the scenery. So that combined with that movie is just kind of made me like appreciate the good and the bad.
Okay.
You're asking good questions. Yeah. It's stumping me.
Oh, that's a good thing though. See, you know, I like to get to know my guests
good.
And yeah. So if you weren't making films, what would you be doing?
See, that's the thing. I don't know. Like, my whole life, this is all I ever wanted. But there was a short period there where I thought I'd be a professional skateboarder, but that was for like a day. And I was like, no, there's no way. I mean, if I couldn't do film, like if for some reason it was against the law for me to do film, I would definitely try to become like a social worker, try to help kids. I'd want to do something to help people. I don't really care what it is. That's another really good question.
Well, in my real life, I am a nurse, so I totally get that. Like, trying to get and try to help other people. And I've always wanted to be something in healthcare. And I actually was in medical school when I was in the car crash. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that detoured me. But, you know, still doing
what I love. Well, thank you for being a nurse.
Oh, well, thank you. So,
I know
if money was no
in hospitals.
Oh, exactly. As I like to tell my interns and residents, like, yeah, you're the doctor, but we're the neck. Like, we're always like saving you guys here. So, got it. Yeah, and that's why it's called practicing medicine, because you know doctors don't always have the right answers. So, you know. That's why, you know, us nurses are here.
Yeah, you're underappreciated.
That's what I like to say.
Yes,
definitely. But that's okay, because at the end of the day, you know, I feel, you know, my cup is full. So that's what I like. So if money was no issue and you could visit anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Hogwarts. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, and I've always wanted to go there. I'm still mad that I didn't get my letter when I turned 11. like, I'm still very upset about that. Yeah, I would definitely want to go to England and Scotland and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Or at least, like, the closest maybe Universal Studios and get to see. I know in Hollywood we have one, and it's pretty cool. My kiddo loved it, so.
Yeah,
he was
I definitely
want to
go to one of those.
That is so cool. Oh, goodness. So, what are you not very good at?
Cooking. I'm a terrible cook. my wife does all the cooking. I go to McDonald's or I'll make mac and cheese. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things I'm not good at. I feel like I'm not really good at anything, so...
Oh,
but yeah,
you
cooking is definitely one. Well, I mean,
the big one. Okay.
Like the second that I say, yeah, I'm good at that, I can't get any better in my mind.
Okay. I like that. That's a good way to look at that.
Yeah.
So tell me something that's true that almost nobody agrees with you on.
Ooh. Something that's true that nobody agrees with me on. Oh, I mean, I know only my like family and friends will get this one, but it's that my cat Sadie does love me. Everybody says that she hates me, but she loves me. She's sitting right here.
Nice. Unconditional love.
Yep.
Now, do you have any kids?
I do not. Not yet.
Nope. Okay.
Hopefully one day.
Yeah. Okay. So that's cool. So with all the guys on your production team, were they all military? Is that how you guys met?
Yeah, we actually all met. Yeah, so there's Sean and Lott. He's actually stationed out in California right now. I worked on a short film with him. That's the only time I got to work with him. It was called Typecast. That's one of the short films that I'm going to be redoing. Michael Oliger, he lives out in Colorado right now. He's going to school for sound production, sound design. He's probably the one I'd say has the closest level to my passion. He likes the horror movies more than I do because I think they're cheap. But he loves them. Tyler York, I actually met him through Mike Oliger. Didn't really get to know him until around this summer, but he's a go-getter, so I love having him on my team. Josh Kruger, he's down in Maryland. I deployed with him. He was, like, one of my best friends for a while. He's still one of my best friends, but we've lost touch since I moved as much, but he's working with us still. And then, let's see, there's Jay Walker. He actually was PAO with me. So public affairs rather than combat camera. He's the only oddball in our crew, but he's just an awesome all-around guy, great filmmaker. We did a 10-minute documentary about the layered security in Afghanistan, and it's been, like, all over the place. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm confident with my crew, yeah.
That's really cool. Now, I saw a really sweet post that your mom did about you being tonight. Did your parents support this decision that you made to be in film?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think my mom, because I lived with my mom growing up, I think she kind of doubted it for a while there when I was in high school, and she was trying to, like, nudge me in another direction. But after the whole military thing, I think she was like, okay, he actually is serious about this. My dad, he's always been supportive. He lived in Virginia. I grew up in Connecticut. And so I saw him, like, over the summers every year and at Christmas. But we live closer now, and our relationship's gotten stronger. Thank you, Lisa. They'll understand that. But that's an inside thing. But, yeah, they're both very supportive in any way they can be.
Okay. No, that's great. I mean, as a parent myself, like, you know, we try to support our kids and, you know, everything that they do. And if they fail, all we can do is kind of pick them up and brush them off and tell them to keep going. So.
Yep, and they both do that for me. So I appreciate and love them both. I love them all my
very
parents.
Cool. Nice. So, I know that you're kind of getting out there with the short films coming out and with the production company. Is there any way that if somebody wanted to get involved or help financially that they could reach out to you?
Yeah, so we have a Gmail set up. It's Reluctant Productions with the number 1, all one word, at Gmail. They could email that if they wanted to, you know, reach out. We have a Venmo. Same thing, Reluctant Productions, and a Facebook page. Definitely go like that. And, you know, yeah, any support we can get, we'd appreciate.
Okay. Well, very cool. So, in closing, is there anything else you'd like to share or tell me about, you know, what's next for you?
Well, I'm waiting to hear back from a couple film schools I applied to this year, so fingers crossed on that. And I guess I'd like to say that Reluctant Productions as a company, we're just a bunch of nobodies trying to achieve, be our life's goal, our life's dream. And if you're going to support anybody, if you're listening, support the little guy, because that's who we are and that's who we will always be.
Well, you guys caught my eye because you guys are all veterans, and I fully support veterans and try to help out, you know, get the word out for you guys. So,
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, of course. Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of fun, actually.
Oh, good. As I said, it's like having a beer with me.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and have a good night.
You too. Thank you again.
Of course. I would like to thank all our sponsors, listeners, and, of course, our network family. Make sure you stay connected to Sage Network by liking, following, hearting us on all social media at Sage Mentoring. And until next week, hug those babies, they grow too fast. Own your choice. Namaste and good night.